blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Anna Kogal from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from, well, I will tell you, I have a Thanksgiving treat for you because I've got the most wonderful articles. All right, and they are from the Wall Street Journal. One is entitled, The Benefits of Retelling Family Stories, and the other two, I'll tell you when we get to them, but they're also from a special encore edition of the Journal Report, part of the Wall Street Journal. So, I am going to start reading to you about the benefits of retelling family stories. And why, you might ask? Well, because it's Thanksgiving, that's why. And you may be getting together with many wonderful family members, and you may be retelling some wonderful family stories. So here are the benefits. At holiday gatherings, go ahead and tell those wild or inspiring family tales. Their lessons teach kids about identity. Telling family stories about crazy Uncle Joe or other eccentric relatives is a favorite pastime when families gather for the holidays. But will squirming children or Instagram-obsessed teens bother to listen? Actually, kids absorb more information from family stories than most adults think. And that knowledge bestows surprising psychological benefits, research shows. The best holiday stories are funny or entertaining and often convey life lessons, says Robin Fivish, a psychology professor and director of Emory University's Institute for Liberal Arts. They have a very important function in teaching children. I belong here. I'm part of these stories. They provide not just a script for life, but a set of values and guideposts, she says. Hannah Rose Blakely, 26 years old, says listening to stories about her late uncle led her to appreciate her family's resourcefulness in the face of adversity. A Vietnam veteran who once worked as a roughneck in rattlesnake-infested oil fields, her uncle donned thick leather work boots, wrapped them in burlap, tromped through the grass, and captured any rattlers that thrust their fangs into his protective gear. Then he sold them to laboratories where their venom was harvested for medicine. Family stories were important in forming my idea of the character of the family, says Miss Blakely, a doctoral candidate at Princeton University. More than 90% of teenagers and young adults can retell family stories when asked, even if they seemed uninterested when the stories were told. According to a 2018 study of 66 families with teenage children and 194 college students led by Natalie Merrill, a postdoctoral researcher at Emory. And the youngsters valued the stories for their lessons and insights. Family stories told face-to-face have advantages over social media. Rather than the story fragments and fixed images displayed on most apps, children's interpretations of family stories can evolve and take on new meaning as they mature. Matt Rovetto, 24, remembers wanting as a child to escape when stories were told at his family's holiday gatherings in Duxbury, Massachusetts. Relatives would describe how his great-grandmother rescued Jewish children from Nazi territory in World War II, or how his grandfather, as a teenager at military school, threw his bags out a second-floor window, jumped out, and ran away on the day his parents planned to drive him to college. His grandfather supported himself for a year as a bellhop in Chicago before returning, enrolling in college, and starting a career as an apparel wholesaler. While Mr. Rovetto didn't think much about the stories as a child, He took them to heart later as a college student, aspiring to a career as a filmmaker. When a professor suggested he spend a summer break in Los Angeles working in the film industry, the thought at 19 years old seemed crazy, he says. But he knew his grandparents had taken wild risks that turned out all right. So he drove cross-country with a friend, found work in his field, and returned with valuable experience and a few stories of his own to tell. Mr. Rovetto has since graduated and is working in New York as a cinematographer. His mother, Hannah Rovetto of Duxbury, believes the stories helped instill a sense of adventure. They show you don't have to do what everybody else is expecting of you, she says. You can do something a little crazy and still get back on a path of your own choosing. Intergenerational stories anchor youngsters as part of a larger group, helping them develop a sense of identity. In a 2008 study, researchers at Emory quizzed 40 children ages 10 to 14 on 20 family history questions, such as how their parents met or where their grandparents grew up. Those who answered more questions correctly showed, on separate assessments, less anxiety and fewer behavior problems. Parents who include in their stories descriptions of feelings they experienced at the time, such as distress, anger, or sadness, and tell how they coped with those emotions by venting, reframing, or calming them, help children learn to regulate their own emotions, Dr. Fivish says. Researchers in another study asked families with 10 to 12-year-old children to reminisce about happy and negative experiences, then followed up 2 years later. Children whose parents explained negative emotions and how they resolved them had better social and academic skills. Family stories also can serve as antidotes for the pressures many teens feel to get good grades, get into an elite college, and land immediately on an established career path. Cynthia Blakely, Hannah Rose Blakely's mother and a liberal studies instructor at Emory, enjoys telling stories about her late mother, Shirley, a seamstress and waitress who suffered from anxiety. Her mother overcame personal obstacles to attend college in her 50s and embarked on a new career as a social worker from age 60 to 78. Those were the happiest 18 years of her life, Dr. Blakely says. The story inspired Dr. Blakely to set aside her teaching career while her daughter was growing up, work from home as an editor, and return to teaching in her 50s. Standing in front of a classroom for the first time in 20 years was terrifying, Dr. Blakely says, but I soon realized that I absolutely love teaching. She sometimes tells her mother's story to her students, saying, don't feel too stressed out if your career trajectory isn't a straight shot. It's the season when adults might want to think about stories they would like younger family members to know, Dr. Fivish says. Telling a story might seem weird on a Monday at 3 p.m., but over Thanksgiving dinner, it can be easier to say, you know, I've been thinking about a story, she says. A good place to start is to ask yourself, if I had to leave the children with one or two stories, what are the ones I would want them to know? Good, huh? Thought you might like. Okay, here's another one. As that lady started her new career at age 60, this one is entitled, this is again from the Wall Street Journal, from the Encore Journal report. Second acts. He left a corner office for a windowless one and loves it. In Ambrose Jones's 33-year career with a big accounting firm, He says, the fun part was mentoring and teaching young people, not crunching numbers. Now he gets to do the fun part full time. Dr. Jones, in 2007, became a professor of accounting and auditing at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro at the age of 59. It was not an easy transition, he says. The pressure to publish in the first 5 to 6 years is very difficult, says Dr. Jones, who is now 71, and has written for a dozen academic and teaching publications. Still, it has been a blast, he says. Dr. Jones says he feels comfortable teaching complicated accounting and auditing topics, but also relating his experiences as an audit partner to illustrate how real-world practices differ from what is outlined in textbooks. As an auditor, he dealt with clients of differing sizes, advising management on accounting and internal controls. When he was 51, though, he says the firm where he was a partner in Richmond, Virginia, shifted to become an all-around financial services provider. It started to feel like a different firm, says Dr. Jones, and that change is what led him to finally act on something he had first started to think about a decade earlier, when a managing partner had left the firm to get a PhD and become a professor. That is really cool, Dr. Jones recalls thinking at the time. He worked a few more years to amass the savings he would need to be able to switch careers. He would have to earn a PhD before he could become a professor. Then, with encouragement from a friend who taught economics at Virginia Commonwealth University, he applied to the PhD program at VCU and was accepted. He started in August 2003. He says he went from a corner office with floor-to-ceiling glass and beautiful views to a windowless, musty office at VCU that he shared with another PhD candidate. There was culture shock, he admits. But those early struggles have led to an extremely satisfying second career on the faculty at UNC Greensboro. My favorite part is mentoring students with career and personal advice based on my own life experiences, he says. Four of his former students are CEOs, he says, and three more are in financial services in New York City. They could do things I couldn't do, but I could help them get there, he says. Dr. Jones works from home part of the day, which helps with his exercise regime. Rigorous workouts and his academic pursuits are helping him age gracefully, he says. If you're working your brain trying to solve problems, it's like working your body to keep it in shape. I feel young. He's thinking about scaling back to part-time to have more time for his grandchildren and to travel with his family. But he has no plans to retire. I cannot imagine a life where the highlight of each day is walking the dog and checking the mail. Second Acts looks at the varied paths people are taking in their 50s and beyond. You can reach Miss Halpert, Halpert, a writer in Michigan, and let us know how you're starting over at reports@wsj.com. And yes, this was from Julie Halpert. Okay, our next article is entitled, How to Decide Whether to Move or Stay in your House in Retirement. Also, answering a reader's question about getting a vaccine against shingles. My husband and I are going back and forth about whether to remodel our current home so we can continue living here as we age. Can you address some of the pros and cons of staying put? Full disclosure, we like where we live and are leaning toward remodeling. Great question, and this is from Ask Encore Glenn Rufinock. And I applaud you for talking about this. Trying to figure out whether and or when to move in later life is among the biggest and most difficult decisions that retirees face. And many of us, not surprisingly, are reluctant to grapple with this. As you're probably aware, most older Americans, as a number of surveys have shown, wish to, quote, age in place. They want to remain in or near their current homes and neighborhoods. That's largely because most older adults, like you, enjoy where they live. Given that, a remodel or retrofit of your existing home, widening doorways, making cabinets more accessible, installing grab bars in the shower, among many other steps, would seem to make sense. Ideally, you could continue to live safely and independently right where you are. But deciding where to live as we age is about more than wide doorways and grab bars. Some other issues to consider. Finances. First, can you afford to retrofit? A major overhaul easily could cost tens of thousands of dollars. And is that the best use of your money in retirement? Brant Ross, age 82, a retired businessman who teaches classes in Atlanta about transitions in later life, says a house that's been remodeled entirely or almost entirely with seniors in mind may limit potential buyers when the time comes to sell the house. Transportation. According to the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety, older Americans are outliving their ability to drive safely by an average of 7 to 10 years. If you stay in your home and if you're forced to reduce or eliminate your time behind the wheel, what options will you have to get around? You should have the answers in hand before you make your decision. Socialization. Staying socially engaged as we age is important for both our emotional and physical health. Ask yourselves, will staying in our current home or moving give us the best opportunity to remain socially active? This can cut both ways. If many family members and friends live nearby, that might argue for staying put. But if many or most family members live out of town, and if visiting friends means, again, a good amount of driving, a move could be the better option, Mr. Ross says. Your spouse and your family. I hate to bring this up, but what if one of you dies? Would your current home or an alternative home/community be better for the surviving spouse? And perhaps, most important, don't delay and delay your decision. If you fail to act, whether it's a retrofit or a move, you could reach the point where you're unable to act because of ill health in many cases, and an adult child or other family member could end up making these decisions for you. To sum it up, I'm not anti-retrofit. Modifications clearly can help some homeowners in some circumstances. But again, in making this decision, please think about more than simply remodeling. All right, now here's the question. Shingles vaccine, what shingles vaccine? That was the reaction from a friend when I mentioned that my wife and I just returned from our pharmacy, where we received our second dose of a vaccine called Shingrix, that's ending with an X, to help prevent shingles. Shingles, as most people know, is a painful, at times debilitating, rash. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, an episode of shingles typically clears up in 2 to 4 weeks. But for some, the pain can last months or even years after the rash goes away. If you've had chickenpox, you're at risk for shingles. And that risk increases as you get older. By the way, more than 99% of Americans born before 1980 have had chickenpox, according to the CDC, even if they don't remember it. That's 99% of us. the first vaccine to help ward off shingles, called Zostavax, was introduced in 2006. In late 2017, the Food and Drug Administration approved a new vaccine called Shingrix, which is given in two doses, separated by 2 to 6 months. Today, Shingrix, which is more than 90% effective at preventing shingles, is recommended by the CDC as the preferred vaccine for healthy adults age 50 and older. That said, Zostavax, which reduces the risk of developing shingles by 51%, can still be used if, for instance, a person is allergic to ingredients in Shingrix or has a severe reaction to the first dose of the vaccine, or if Shingrix isn't immediately available. Shingrix, of course, isn't perfect. Some people experience noticeable side effects, including muscle pain, headaches, shivering, fever, stomach pain, or nausea. And some pharmacies can't seem to keep the medicine in stock. My wife and I had to revisit our pharmacy several times before we could get our second shot. All right, home sweet home. When asked how strongly they agree or disagree with the following statement, what I'd really like to do is stay in my current residence for as long as possible, the following percentages of surveyed adults said. Okay, for all people surveyed, 23% said somewhat agree that they would like to stay in their current residence, and 41% said they strongly agree. Now, of those asked, ages 18 to 49, 24 said yes, they want to stay, somewhat agree, and 29 said yes, absolutely, 29%. Ages 50 to 64, 24 somewhat agree, and 43 strongly agree that they want to stay where they are. And finally, ages 65 plus, 17% say they are somewhat agreed that they'd like to stay put, and 69% say they strongly agree that they want to stay put. Alrighty. All right, and just in case you have a little bit more time to read over the holidays right now, I'm going to give you a couple of book selections reported by the Journal Report Encore, the best retirement books of 2019. Here are six books that may help both your wallet and your well-being, and I may not get through all six, but if I don't, I'll continue it next week. Whatever your age, this year's book selections offer myriad ways to define and redefine what healthy aging means to you. You'll find helpful advice and insights for achieving health and well-being in mind, body, and bank account, and perhaps inspirations for your next adventure. All right, so here goes. Your Complete Guide to a Successful and Secure Retirement. And this is by Larry E. Svedroe, S-W-E-D-R-O-E, and Kevin Grogan. Veteran investment and personal finance experts, Larry E. Svedroe and Kevin Grogan, answer essential questions you probably didn't even know to ask in this authoritative yet accessible handbook. They start with the risks posed by what they dub, quote, the four horsemen of the retirement apocalypse, end quote. Stock valuations at historic highs, bond yields at historic lows, increasing longevity, and its mate, the cost of long-term care. Such risks, the authors point out, can be particularly threatening to those who underestimate how much money they'll need in retirement and overestimate how long they'll continue to work. The authors offer investment strategies for different needs, goals, values, interests, physical health, and bucket lists. They walk readers through the intricacies of Social Security, Medicare, health savings accounts, health care plans, IRAs, annuities, and insurance. And to conclude, they give sage advice on estate planning, including difficult family discussions that can help to prevent surprises and friction later, and how to protect both yourself and those you love against the threat of elder financial abuse. All right, another one, elderhood, redefining aging, transforming medicine, reimagining life. There is a frustrating paradox at the heart of Lewis Aronson's sometimes bracing, always compassionate treatise, based on 25 years of clinical practice as a geriatrician. The U.S. healthcare system has not kept pace with the changing needs of an aging population that is living longer because of the availability of ever more advanced medical treatments. She points out that although about 40% of all hospital patients are seniors, medical students receive relatively little training focused specifically on treating and caring for those patients. As a result, she writes, doctors might neglect such issues as how an aging, more vulnerable immune system can affect the course of a disease, and how coexisting medical conditions can lead to dangerous drug interactions when specialists don't consult each other. She urges everyone to push back against outmoded assumptions about aging that can blind us from seeing the individual within an aging, perhaps ailing, body. And the last one for today, by Bill Bryson, The Body, A Guide for Occupants. Few writers combine wit and erudition as nimbly as Bill Bryson. In his latest book, he explores terrains intimate and mysterious. We pass our existence within this warm wobble of flesh, and yet take it almost entirely for granted. Most of us lack the foggiest idea how or why our various body parts do their jobs so seamlessly, and we are baffled when they fail us. Mr. Bryson draws on extensive research, interviews, and case histories, as well as his own wry humor and sense of wonder. Each chapter reads like a portrait of a different physical feature or attribute, often including medical and scientific discoveries. Ultimately, Mr. Bryson encourages us to cherish our bodies. After all, life is uncertain except for this. In a few tens of years, at most, you will close your eyes forever and cease to move at all. So it might not be a bad idea to take advantage of movement for health and pleasure while you still can. Well, I'm afraid that we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Anika Gal, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after our broadcast at ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 832-5138. Have a great Thanksgiving.